Okay, I try to be tolerant, I really do, but I don't understand why we accept the disingenuousness of the crowd of people who misappropriate the symbolism of the American Revolution, claiming to be patriots when their behavior is actually seditious. How do you wave the flag, wrap yourself in it, while hating the very government you claim to revere? That flag is about democracy, and democracy gave us a less than perfect government, perhaps, but it is government nonetheless. The so-called Tea Party really just hates their government. They don't want people who need help from their government to get that help. They don't want it to pay for education, for the roads and bridges and water systems that are crucial to commerce or to job creation. They don't want a nickel of their money to be taken to pay for the debt that has been run up by their own leaders, like Ronald Reagan. They want it to shut it down. They want to show people how government doesn't work by making sure it can't work. And they will run up the cost of government by defaulting on their own debt, raising the nation's bond rating, increasing the interest rates we pay to China. Here we are, folks, through the looking glass. I'm Alan Jennings. By day, night, most weekends, too, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. But because WDIY is a national public radio affiliate, it's cool enough to have the Lehigh Valley Discourse and give me an opportunity to bring the important public affairs issues of our time to the smartest listeners in the Lehigh Valley. So it is in the midst of the madness of last night's vote on restoring funding to the government that we welcome the new congressman representing parts of the Lehigh Valley. He is Matt Cartwright. Congressman, welcome.
Nice to be here, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. We're glad to have you here. And you don't hate your government, do you?
Not so far, but I was getting close to losing my sense of equanimity a couple of nights ago. It wasn't the whole government. It was a certain group that you were just alluding to. The last couple of weeks have been tough.
You've been serving your country as a member of Congress for now, 10 months, right?
That's right.
Given how far, how's that working for you? Are you wondering what the heck you were thinking?
Well, you start off with a certain set of expectations. I knew going into it I would be a freshman congressman in the minority party in the House. So you don't expect to be able to change the world right away. But on the other hand, there's a learning curve to being a good congressman, and I intend to conquer that learning curve. And every week I can feel myself advancing further and further along it. I was a courtroom attorney for 25 years. There's a long learning curve involved in how to figure out how to work with juries and persuade and win your client's case for him or her. I took many years and I got over that learning curve. I'm on a new one now, and every week I can feel myself advancing further and further along it. So even though in the great scheme of things, we're not accomplishing much in the House, and really nothing at all, absolutely, for the last 3 weeks. I can still feel myself moving along that curve, so that eventually I'm gonna turn myself into a very effective congressman for this district.
For many years, I thought that someday I would be a member of Congress. I mean, that was something that was kind of in my goals and in my life. And anytime I go to Washington, I look up at that Capitol dome, really inspired by its awesomeness. And you must kind of walk through those halls thinking about the people who have gone before you, even in you know, the what they call Gucci Gulch, the places where the members, the lobbying army tackle you on your way in. You must just be in awe of the fact that you are in that place at this time, and to be able to do anything must just be an inspiring thing.
There are a couple things that spring to mind when you say that. There is wonderful, beautiful architecture there. The statuary is spectacular there. When I was present for the second inauguration of Barack Obama, the entire house was packed in really a very small amphitheater surrounding the president as he gave his second inaugural address. And surrounded by all of the members of Congress, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Supreme Court, the entire cabinet, and surrounded by this, Greek and Roman architecture, and then looking down on the mall with 800,000 people cheering like mad.
Yeah.
It's hard not to feel a little tingle at that point.
I went to the first inaugural and was in the seats and met Tom Hanks and James Taylor, and that was just awesome. They characterize you as a liberal. I'm not even sure what that means anymore, given the way the fulcrum has moved in the government these days. Where do you put yourself? What do you see as the role of government when you go to Washington to represent your constituents?
Well, I am a proud member, Alan, of the Progressive Caucus of the U.S. House.
I would be too.
And we don't say liberal, we say progressive these days, whatever you want to call me. I think the best approach is to take it issue by issue. For example, I am a proud, staunch advocate of environmental protections. I think we can do things much better and much greener in a much more loving way for our Mother Earth than we're doing now. And government plays a big role in that. We can educate our kids better. We can make sure that Head Start is universal so that all of the children, all of the 3 and 4 year olds getting ready for school are up to speed and they're not continually playing catch up with the other kids and eventually thinking less of themselves, losing their confidence. Because success in academics is so much about confidence. If you don't feel confident, you don't feel that that sense of success, of fulfillment as you achieve things in academics, then it makes you want to drop out. And that's what happens. Government can help there. Government can help in taking care of seniors. There are those who are very ready to take the knife out and slash seniors' benefits, including one of the budgets I saw this year that includes something called chain CPI, which is a $50 expression for seniors' increases are less than they were supposed to be.
CPI meaning Consumer Price Index.
That's right.
And the inflation rate.
Right, and the idea is that the chained CPI is a more accurate reflection of what seniors are actually buying and paying for. End result, they get less money. And, I represent 6 counties, Alan. Northampton County I have half of. I have half of 5 counties, and I have all of Schuylkill County. Mm. Now, Schuylkill County, and that makes it easy to keep the statistics on Schuylkill County because I have the whole county. And I can tell you, we have 149,000 people who live in Schuylkill County. Fully 38,000 citizens there exist on Social Security as their only source of income. And these people are not living high off the hog. And to say that we're paying them too much, look them straight in the eye and tell them that, I won't do it.
Was there, you look back in your life, to how you developed the values that brought you to the opinions that you have and how you represent those opinions and your constituents in Washington. Was there an event, a development, an incident that led to you having the values that, the progressive values that you have, and then eventually led you to go into public service?
Well, a couple of things I'll mention. I was a history scholar. I was a history major in college. Loved history. Even in elementary school, I started reading history. And developed a real respect for the Congress, for the American government, for the presidents over the years. Read so much about them. Incidentally, if you've read, there's a couple of great books out right now. John Meacham's book on Jefferson is terrific. I read Ron Chernow's book on Alexander Hamilton. Read those two books. If you're fearful that there's too much partisanship going on right now,
it was worse. That's hard to imagine.
It was worse.
That's
back
just hard
then.
To imagine.
But so I had I really developed a reverence for the institutions of government from studying it in history, and then I would say. There was no watershed moment that made me a progressive, but look, Alan, my entire adult life, as I mentioned, I've been working in the courtrooms. And every time I was in the courtroom, I was sticking up for a family. Mm. I was sticking up for somebody in the middle class, some family that was almost always opposed by a powerful force, whether it was an insurance company, a big corporation. They were always opposed by somebody way more powerful, and they needed me to stand up for them and be their voice. That's a big motivating influence on a person. When you're the only one standing between a family and injustice that could befall them, and economic catastrophe, usually, that did influence me greatly, and it made me want to do things, whatever I can do, to stick up for the middle class and the working families.
We're going to take a quick break, and I can't skip leaving some of the musical interludes out of my show anyway. So we're going to take a quick break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope you like me. Getting to know you, putting it my way nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea. Getting to know you, getting to feel
free. Hi, this is Bill Ojemon Smith. We are in the fourth day of our fall membership drive, and we are looking for your support. For your support of local public affairs like today's program, Lehigh Valley Discourse, as well as all of our national and international news from NPR and all of our diverse music programming. 610-758-8810 or securely online at wdiy.org. And we're looking for five, and we have one so far, and I'd like to give our thanks to Apollo Unlimited of Easton. And that's in your constituency, I think, Matt. Apollo Unlimited, a business in Easton, became a new supporting member of WDIY. We'd like four more of you to make that call to 610-758-8810 or go securely online at wdiy.org.
Sure. Thanks to Apollo Unlimited and all the great folks in Easton. And I encourage everybody to chip in. Do your part. Don't take a free ride. Do what you can to help WDIY. All the terrific programming. When I heard I was going to be on public radio, I was excited this afternoon because I've always been a fan of NPR and public radio. Up in Scranton, we have WVIA, and the TV channel, the radio channels are always tuned to WVIA up there.
Cool. That reference to "you never give me your money" had nothing to do with our listeners calling the radio station. It was actually about Congress not doing enough for low-income people. And, you know, the boogeyman these days is the welfare state. You know, we have a tiny little sliver of the population that's actually on cash assistance. In Lehigh Valley, out of 630,000 people, 7,000 are on TANF. And yet, a family of three gets $403 a month. They haven't had that increase since 1985. The average size of the family is 2.1 people, not 2.1 kids, 2.1 people. And we exert all this energy to make them the bad guy. And that, of course, is the Tea Party and its attempt to just completely kill government.
It's been amazing for me in the Congress this year. You know, we have this farm bill problem. We can't seem to pass a farm bill, and the farm bill has a nutrition bill within it. And in fact, the nutrition bill takes up about 70% of the farm bill money. And there's such a desire on the part of the Tea Partiers to cut food stamps, you know, to cut the SNAP benefits, right. The Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. Many of us on the Democratic side of the House this year took the SNAP challenge. I did it one day, and, you know, the idea is it's about something like a dollar and a half a meal, you know, $4.50 a day. SNAP benefits, and here you go. Do your best. Live on that.
I had to do.
I was cranky all day.
Yeah.
Because you have to think about what you put in your mouth. You can't just run. You can't do the things you normally do. And in fact, toward the afternoon, I like to have a cup of coffee, and I found out I ran out of money.
Right.
It's not like a diet.
That's almost a whole meal right there. The cost of a whole meal according to the SNAP program.
Right. And so that was a wonderful wake-up for all of us who did it. The problem is that none of the Tea Partiers did it. They're firmly committed to cutting SNAP benefits. In fact, they killed the first version of the farm bill. It was like this. I was going to vote against the farm bill because it cut $20 billion out of it. The Tea Party voted against it because it didn't cut enough.
It's amazing, isn't
they it? They wanted $30 billion cut out of the farm bill. So they voted against it, and it failed. The next time it came up, the general bill was to cut $40 billion out of SNAP. I'm not sure what these people think about, but what they think is they think that people use food stamps to buy crab legs and lobster tails.
Right, and cigarettes. Don't forget the booze.
And they think that, and it's easy to think that when you don't see those people. You know, right. You don't run into those people when your whole drive route takes you between your gated community and the country club.
Right. And that explains why 70,000 people a month are being fed with supplemental assistance through the Second Harvest Food Bank. By the way, you had come to visit the Second Harvest Food Bank. You left some staff people behind from CACLV who were saying they thought you should run for president, by the way. So I thought you ought to have that bit of information. You have some fans because of that.
Well, they have low standards, but they are very nice people, and I was extremely impressed with the Second Harvest Food Bank, the kind of work they do, how organized they are, how together they are. The amount of food that they move through that place is just astonishing, and the inventiveness, the resourcefulness that they bring to bear on feeding all of the people that they feed. I'm just so impressed with them.
Well, and we appreciate your support. If you don't cut SNAP, that means we don't have to do as much to help people standing in line. You know how completely disempowering and demoralizing it must be to stand in line for someone's handouts. You know, you don't want anybody to see you. You hope that nobody that you know from where you used to work and actually a lot of the people that are in line for food assistance are working people who aren't getting paid enough to feed their family. And, you know, it cannot be good for someone to have to stand in line for somebody else's handouts. SNAP benefits are a much better, much more effective, much more efficient way to feed people than making people stand in line idly, hoping to get somebody's leftovers.
Well, let me bend your ear a little bit about what happened the last couple of weeks. We had these two deadlines, the CR, which is a continuing resolution. Again, that's a $50 Congress term for continuing to fund the government operations
without a full appropriation. It's just kind of carrying it along because you can't agree on an actual appropriation.
Exactly, Alan. It's a Band-Aid because you can't come up with a real budget. So we had you come up with these CR deadlines, and if you crash the deadline, then you close the government. That's the one deadline, and the other one is the debt ceiling, that if you crash that deadline, you can't pay your bills on time. Well, the Tea Party folks decided they were going to use both of those things as pressure points to try to make the Democrats in the House cave, and Democrats in the Senate and the president cave, and do what? Defund Obamacare. Oh.
You know, and what I've been impressed by is that Obama has been more resolved this time. The first year, he just caved. He started from compromised positions, compromised from those compromised positions, and he still didn't get any support from the other side of the aisle anyway. This time, I think he was much more dug in and much less willing to make any deals because he knew the last time he tried, he got burned.
He did, and a couple, you know, the question is, all right, well, congratulations. You last night, about midnight, we passed in the House the CR, and we listed the debt ceiling. But the question is, aren't you just kicking the can down another 3 months, and they're going to pull it again? And right. The answer is, I don't think so, and that's for two reasons. Number one, what you said, I think that President Obama has found his voice. I think he's found his backbone. He realizes, and I think it may conceivably have to do with the fact that he'll never have to run for another election,
sure.
And he can really be himself. But whatever it is, I met with him last Wednesday with
name dropper.
Yeah, name dropper. Well, I should say I.
Not that I'm jealous or anything.
I and the whole rest of the Democratic caucus were invited to the East Room, and I had a chat with him, and I said, the people in northeastern Pennsylvania are really happy with you right now, and the thing we're happiest about is your backbone. And he smiled and moved on to the next person. But I wanted to say that because I think it's true, and I think it's something that the Tea Party didn't bank on. They didn't know that. You're right. He's kind of been able to been pliable before, but now he said, I'm not going to negotiate. This is not a negotiable item, whether the United States pays its bills on time, and I mean it. And he did mean it, and they didn't realize that, and they found out the hard way. The second thing, of course, is that closing down the government for 2 weeks and flirting with another economic catastrophe, which is what would happen, we would go right into a very, very deep depression right away.
Internationally,
if we crashed our debt ceiling. You just have to pay your bills. This is not new spending. This is paying for your old spending. This is paying for the Iraq wars. It's paying for TARP. It's paying for all of the things that we spent before. You have to pay those bills, because if you don't, you lose your credit rating. You lose your credit rating, you pay higher interest, and the entire world economy circles the drain because of that.
It's the irony, really, in that they thought they were being fiscally responsible, but by their form of fiscal responsibility, government shutdown and defaulting on your debt, it would force additional costs that were purely debt service related.
You know,
nothing productive for the American people comes out of that, except to throw large numbers of additional people out of work and an economy into recession or depression.
The scary bit, Alan, is that a lot of them don't get it. A lot of the Tea Parties, I know these people. I make it my business to get to know members of Congress. That's my job. And they paraded in front of the TV cameras the last couple of weeks. There had to be two dozen of them who really didn't believe that crashing the debt ceiling would be a bad thing. People who are so deeply, deeply ignorant of basic macroeconomics that they could throw the entire world into a depression and not realize
for
they did it.
Principle that is a flawed principle.
But the second reason I think it's unlikely they're going to do it again, I mean, number one, now they realize the president has a lot more backbone, and the Republicans and the Democrats in the House and the Senate have a lot more resolve than they expected. The second is that they read polls, too. These are politicians we're talking about, and they read polls, and they can see that the Republican approval ratings for Congress right now are as low as they have been in 20 and maybe 30 years.
But what is the dynamic here? The estimate is that 50 to 70 or so are these radical right wingers. So how is it that Boehner, the speaker and the leader of the majority caucus, meaning the Republicans in the House, how is it that they can hold him hostage and hit the party? I mean, people like Charlie Dent, a good man, a good friend too of mine, are in tough spots when they have to support that kind of position.
Well, first on Charlie Dent, he is a good guy. In fact, he voted to open up the government with no strings attached. And he, in fact, he gave a floor speech urging his fellow Republicans to vote the same way. I was impressed with the with Charlie. He did the right thing. And so did my colleague Lou Barletta from the 11th Congressional District. Also,
former mayor of Hazleton.
That's right. I disagree with him on other subjects, but I saw him this morning, and I said, Lou, thanks for the upvote on opening up the government. And he said, Matt, it was the right thing to do. But, you know, we have these folks in the Tea Party that really don't understand the damage they're doing. They're very one-dimensional in their view. They want to cut spending. They want to cut government. They hate government. It's oftentimes you hear them say, "I'm only in this for a little while. I'm going to get in here and cut government and get out." Mm-hmm. So it's not really the spirit of public service that seems to be moving these people.
We're going to take another break, and I keep forgetting to tell everybody that our guest tonight is Matt Cartwright, the congressman representing the new district that is a gerrymandered district that goes from Scranton and Schuylkill County down into the northern and eastern section of Lehigh Valley. We're glad to have Congressman Cartwright in the studio with us, and stick around. We'll be right back.
And I keep forgetting to give the call-in number. It's 610-758-8810. You want to call up and make a pledge, that's the number, 610-758-8810.
Way to go, Congressman. Okay, we're back with a quick pitch. Bill Dotremont Smith, former executive director and volunteer for the radio station.
Absolutely, yes. And public affairs coordinator. So I help coordinate these programs and coordinate with Alan and our other hosts like Sally and John and Ray. It is our fall membership drive. We're asking you to show your support by making that call to 610-758-8810 or going securely online to wdiy.org. Decide how much WDI is worth to you. And yeah, perhaps it's worth $10 a month, 33 cents a day. Become a sustaining member at the $10 a month level. Or perhaps you could afford $15 or $20 a month. It's still a lot less than you pay on many of your monthly bills on your credit or debit card. We can set you up easily and quickly. 610-758-8810. I do have two thanks. I have one from Matt's constituency here, Patricia of Easton. Thank you.
That's probably because of you making the pitch, Congressman.
Right, absolutely. Do some more of it for us, please. And Mariam of Allentown, becoming a sustaining member with those monthly contributions. Thank you to both of you. We are looking for two more during Lehigh Valley Discourse, two more between now and 7 p.m. You can be one of them by making that call, 610-758-8810. Thanks. We do need it. We have a daily goal to meet. We need your support. 610-758-8810. We're not gonna take it. 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 Never did and never will. Don't want no religion. That's my angry music. You know, I don't quite understand why the radicals in the House are so angry, because they're protecting their constituents. You know, people with a lot of money are keeping their money. We do very well by the well-to-do in our society.
very many good people who are well-to-do. This is not to trash the affluent or people who have been fortunate enough to benefit from the American economy, but there are far too many people out there that are being left behind. This is a jobless recovery. That means there's no pressure on wages. Wages aren't going up. What do you think about a minimum wage increase?
Oh, I'm all for it. You know, the people who argue against a minimum wage increase always say the same thing. Well, it's going to cost jobs. If I have to spend more per employee, then I have to cut down on the number of employees. And if you listen to that, and if you believe that, you would have believed it throughout the years, so we still would have a $2.25 minimum wage in this country. The truth is, you get what you pay for. You pay a living wage to people, and you're going to get people that like working for you and give a good product.
And the minimum wage increase would also mean that we'd spend less money on benefits, because so much of the benefits that we're spending assistance programs go to people who are working, and they don't make enough money to pay their bills. And that's a huge percentage of the population. Even the homeless population in Lehigh Valley, 25% of the homeless adults in Lehigh Valley enter homeless shelters employed, and they're homeless. There's something terribly wrong with that equation.
Yeah, I actually, as part of the Progressive Caucus, we had a nationwide rally against fast food companies, which accounts for something like, it's a $200 billion industry, and they won't pay more than minimum wage. You can't raise kids flipping burgers. And you know, they're working as hard as anybody else, so I was happy to take part in that rally. They asked me to go down to Brooklyn, of all places, and give a street corner speech on behalf of the Progressive Caucus. I was glad to do it.
Way to go.
But you know what, Alan? You asked me a question about the dynamic of the numbers of the Tea Partiers, and I didn't answer that.
That's right.
And it was something I was interested in, too. You know, you don't have to be a mathematical wizard to know that 50 or 60 members of the Tea Party can't really control...
Even their caucus, much less the whole Congress.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, their caucus. Their caucus is 230... some odd Republicans. How could 50 or 60 hardline right-wing Tea Partiers control the whole caucus? And the answer is, it's more than just that math. There's also the man behind the curtain. So that if it's the Koch brothers, or if it's the Heritage Foundation, okay, you're a moderate Republican, and there are a lot of them. It is
one of whom is our congressman in the rest of the Lehigh Valley, Charlie Dent.
And I can't speak for the pressures and the forces brought to bear on Charlie Dent, but I know that from time to time you see them taking positions and then retreating from them. For example, we saw this last week where there were a handful, it must have been 17, 18, maybe 20 moderate Republicans who said they would vote for a clean CR. In other words, opening up the government with no strings attached. They came out publicly and they said that. And then within 2 days, almost all of them stepped back from that. And they said, oh, no, we want to defund this part of the Affordable Care Act. And what does that say to you? It's not the Tea Party doing this. It's somebody saying, you know what, listen, Harry Jabip, we know you like being a congressman, but we've decided you're not right-wing enough for us, and we're going to throw in $3 million against you in a primary next May. And then their tune changes. I don't know that that's happening, but it seems like it might.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio, an affiliate of the National Public Radio Network. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight is Congressman Matt Cartwright, who represents the new district that starts sort of down in Easton, winds its way up through the Slate Belt, and then up into Lackawanna and into Schuylkill County. Do you have any part of Luzerne County?
I have half of Luzerne, half of Monroe.
That's a crazy district.
It looks like somebody spilled ink on the map and it just ran every which way.
Yeah, well, it was more controlled than that, as you well know. Somebody had their hand in that. I was amazed at the courage that it took for you to stand up to the gun lobby. So what does that mean for you come next year when you have to run for office again? You were pretty outspoken, and I think that was pretty courageous of you.
Well, it's my view is you have to vote your conscience. And I don't know how long I'll be in the Congress, but I wouldn't be able to look my sons in the eyes, my wife in the eyes, if I took votes that I didn't believe in. Look, I'm not for taking people's guns away. I'm for reasonable restrictions. For example, background checks. I still don't understand why background checks are not the law of this country. You know, the idea is something like 40% of gun sales in this country are done so at gun shows. And gun shows have a loophole for background checks. Why is that? Nobody in this country thinks that's a good idea. The NRA lobby evidently just controls so many people there that are afraid of them. I'm not, and I don't think it's right to be afraid of anybody. You've got to vote your conscience.
Way to go. You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm going to say it again. This is Congressman Matt Cartwright, and he's new to many of us because he's in a new district. And I wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity to chat with the congressman and for people to get to know him a little bit better and understand his positions. Let's talk for just a quick minute about your relationship with Charlie Dent. I've known Charlie for 25 years. He's a good friend. My daughter babysat his kids. And, you know, Lehigh Valley, you know, people know everybody. What kind of relationship do you have with Charlie Dent?
I have a wonderful working relationship with Charlie. I must tell you, I, like Charlie, walk across the aisle quite a bit and talk to my Republican colleagues. Usually it's when it's an issue that affects Pennsylvania. You know, I have the Toby Hanna Army Depot in the northern reaches of my district. That's the biggest employer in this district, over 5,000 people. 5,000 families are supported by that military depot. And every time there's an appropriations bill that comes up, and this is in the springtime, April and May, these things come up, we have to scrutinize them very carefully to see, is there an effect on Toby Hanna? And we smoked out three bills that would have hurt employment at Toby Hanna. What I do then is I walk across the aisle, and one by one, I find my Republican Pennsylvania colleagues. They're all white dudes. They're
easy to spot.
And no, they don't really stand out over there.
Right.
But here's the thing. I talk to all of them, and I say, it might be Lou Barletta, it might be Charlie Dent. I'll say, guys, think about being no on number four tonight. That would hurt Toby Hanna. And Alan, you know what they say to me? Always they say either we're already no on that, or they say, oh, geez, I didn't know that, Matt. Be happy to help you.
That's good to hear. You know, people used to complain about the Congress being too clubby, too friendly. And I think, personally, I yearn for the days that people could talk to each other and make deals, frankly. I mean, we can't. I always say our ideology is only as useful as its practical application. You know, if you can't get it done, why hold those views?
I think there are a lot of really caring Republicans, people that hold the Congress in as high esteem as I do, people like Charlie, people like Lou Barletta. There's a lot of kind of country club Republicans, people that really care about this country and want to make the government work. I enjoy working with them. It's easy to like people like that. They just want to do the right thing. And I think that they are really struggling with this Tea Party situation. In fact, I score John Boehner as one of them. I think he's really struggling. He likes being speaker.
He has to be.
But here's what I think. You remember a couple of years ago, they did away with something called earmarks.
Right.
And earmarks was a way of distributing federal money and getting it back into the congressional districts, only you had the congressmen and women themselves directing that money.
Correct.
But, of course, it was passed out as largesse by the leadership of the parties. The fact that John Boehner doesn't have that ability to control money going to members of his caucus, it cripples him. Mm-hmm. It makes him impotent against the forces of the Tea Party. If he had earmarks back, he'd be in a much better position to keep those radicals under control.
You're listening to Congressman Matt Cartwright on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Matt, we're going to run out of time. I want to ask you one last question. Assuming you're there 20 years from now and you finally decide that you've done your time, how do you want to be remembered for your time in the Congress?
Look, the biggest reason I ran for Congress, aside from all of the things that I hold it in high esteem and I think it's an honorable thing to do with your life, the biggest issue reason is we have a lot of people struggling in northeastern Pennsylvania. We always have much higher unemployment than anywhere else in the country. If you want to really do a family a favor, get them a job. And this is something that, over the past couple of months, it's almost come to be obvious that the Democratic Party has a much better grasp on macroeconomics than certainly the Tea Partiers. We're becoming the party of business.
Yeah.
And my plan for this district, and my hope is over the next 20 years, we're going to even things up. We're gonna make northeastern Pennsylvania a place where young people want to stay because there are jobs for them here. Northeastern Pennsylvania, I want to make it so that our unemployment rate is not always higher than the rest of the nation, that we're on a par with every place else. So this is a place people want to come and settle.
United States Congressman Matt Cartwright. We're lucky to have him in the studio. Thanks, Congressman, for being part of the show tonight. You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. That's it for this show. Stay tuned for Bill Dotremont-Smith.